All right, I'd like to welcome Paxton Schulte to All Over the Map. Extremely grateful to have you on today, Paxton. So, yeah, we might as well start off with a pretty serious question to kick things off. So, who's your favorite character in Dumb and Dumber?
Dumb and Dumber. Oh, I don't know. I try and live my life just like both those guys, Lloyd and Harry. They're two of the people that my life is pretty much based around at this point. So I can't go wrong with those guys. I always wanted to groom dogs, and I think I can see myself doing that in the near future.
Oh, the Shaggin' Wagon.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that
Yeah.
Shaggy Wagon. That's what it is.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's a good idea.
it'd be rude if you didn't.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right on. So, anyways, let's hear all about your childhood growing up in Onaway, Alberta, Canada.
Well, I'm actually sitting in my grandma's house right now where I grew up and spent lots of time eating bread and homemade bread and homemade jam. So I'm right here on the farm where I started it all. I think I wanted to be a I don't know, cowboy slash farmer when I was growing up. We have the dairy, had the dairy here, beef and buffalo, not far from the rink, Onaway, where I still sharpen skates in the evenings just as a community service kind of thing. This is the where it all started, the hard work, the dedication, my parents, my grandparents. And here I am, like I said, full circle, living in my grandma's house since she's pa and my grandpa since they passed away, on the farm where I always loved being. And you can step outside, see the stars, hear the cows, smell the shit, it's all good. Got a few buffalo, dad does now again. And so yeah, you can chase a buffalo anywhere it wants to go.
I'm envious. Connecting to nature, the best, you know?
You're always welcome here.
Oh, thanks, man.
Bring that Irish guy here when you're biking up here, and we'll have a few pints and sit around the bonfire and reminisce about how good we thought we were.
Jeez. Yeah, sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Perfect. So what age did you leave home to pursue your dream of playing in the National Hockey League?
I started, like I said, I tried to play a higher level of hockey here in Onaway. Like you said, it's a small community, so your talent is high and low. Tried to go to St. Albert, where we're zoned now, but even with fudging my address, they found out. So I came back to play Pee Wee. My last year at Pee Wee, I played Midget D. I guess they call it U18. So it would have been like U13 at the time, and I was playing with U18s. I left the first time when I was 14. My parents gave up my guardianship so I could go live in Edmonton with my aunt and uncle. My mom still cries today. She still questions herself about it, but I told her I'd love her even if she hadn't, and so that makes her happy. But truly, at 17, I went to Sherwood Park, played with the Crusaders, which is Tier 2 or Junior A, and got a scholarship from there. Then North Dakota, left North Dakota, went to Spokane for a couple years there. So 14, I guess, truly is kind of when it started. Still able to be home on weekends and see my parents and be on the farm. And then 17, I was away from home just an hour, which is lucky for most kids. I'd say grateful in that sense. Some kids go,
Awesome.
hours, and so now academies. So yeah, it's 14, 17, somewhere around there.
So, what kind of hazing or let's say bullying did you endure that first year away from home, or was that a non-issue for you?
Well, like I said, as a 17-year-old with the Crusaders, I think the only thing I can truly remember is, and I hear stories about boy guys having to gear down and everybody into the can. We never geared down. We were in fully clothed, but I think there was five or six of us. We all had to go into the washroom, and we came out. We told a joke. If the veterans liked the joke, then we got to stay out. And I guess I was lucky because everybody had one shot at it. Come out, told my joke. They didn't laugh, so I had to go back in. One of the veterans told me a joke, and I came out. I told it. The veterans laughed, and so I was out of there. Other than that, for that year was nothing. North Dakota, I know it's frowned upon, the underage drinking, but we had a think like 13 or 14 stations. We all had to do it, and that was the that was it. And then in Spokane, even though I was as a first year veteran rookie, 19 year old, we were just made to load and unload the bus. I never saw any of this stuff that that's come out or spoken about. Maybe I was fortunate. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but like you said, even as an adult working in a shop, I mean, as a 30 year old some guy, I mean, I've spent my hours on the end of a broom, cleaning up in the shop, emptying garbages, and that's just the way it is. I think some of that's as a rite of passage and learning that, you know what, if I have to do the shit jobs, it makes you better so that you don't have to be doing that kind of thing, you know, like almost an incentive, like belittling people or stuff like that they talk about with some of these coaches, never okay. But you know what, getting yelled at and the expectations of someone doing you have expected to do better is huge. Like I said, if you know yourself, you see in your friends and family, nephews, nieces, your kids, you know what, they have so much potential. And sometimes that's the real struggle, is, you know what, you see these kids have so much potential, but they're using 10% of it, you know, and you only want better for them. And sometimes your means of doing that, whether they be right or wrong, is, you know, the heart's in the right way, as long as you go about it the right way to get the most out of them. And only because you care and you want to see them succeed, so you don't have the same struggles that, say, yourself or myself had growing up. Should have worked a little bit harder, didn't have somebody tell me a little bit. You know, kids are going to have to learn from their own mistakes. But, you know, if they can learn from your mistakes, then they're that much further ahead.
Yeah, and some kids are a lot more mentally resilient, you know, going through those certain, say, rituals or whatnot. You know, if you're 18, yeah. 19, you know, playing yeah. your first year in junior, you're probably yeah. treated a little bit different than the, you know, the 16-year-old or the 17-year-old or whatnot. It's all like
comes across as, you know yourself. There's the kids that are a little bit on the cocky side or know-it-all or more apt to give you a little bit lip better. And I'm not saying know your place, but you know what? I was always the respect your elders, and then saying that your elders have to be respectful back. They're not going to ask you to do something that's going to compromise your self values or who you are or what you're trying to accomplish.
100%. Yeah. So I guess how did it make you feel when you saw other players being treated poorly by other players and say, let's say the coaches as well? I mean, was that ever a factor in your career?
You know what? I don't think I ever saw that so much. I know that Bob Hartley, like I said, he was different with his English and his French guys for sure. But as far as the coaches and stuff, like maybe I was blind to it or whatever, but like I said, I don't think anybody, I don't want to say got what they deserve, but you know, like some of the kids, like I said, a little bit lippier, a little bit cockier, you know what, they were pushed and they were, you know, maybe it made to carry an extra bag here and there and so on and so forth. But the hazing or even the coaching stuff, like Brian Maxwell is probably as hard as anybody, and I was one of his favorites on to him, and he worked my ass off, but nothing that I would have ever regretted or not done as a coach myself to get more out of another kid, right? And you find those guys, you have guys that are hard on themselves, guys that you need to blow sunshine up their ass, guys that need to be shown on the board and on the ice, guys that can be told once and they learn from that. Like I said, everybody learns. You're a people manager at the end of the day, as a coach, as a parent. You have, like my parents said, all us four kids we're all different, right? You know, some of us, you know, we're real emotional. Some of us, you know, you could whip us and beat us and we'd work harder and run them till you couldn't breathe anymore. And other ones, you know what, they just run free and accomplish what they needed to on their own.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and human beings are driven on the emotions, right? So, you know, some guys are more emotional than others and they take it a certain way. You can either use it as a motivating factor or, you know, let it take you down. So it sounds like, I don't know, you're one of the lucky ones, it seems like. A lot of these guys we talk to are, you know, they've been through the gauntlet, you know, getting, I know I was in that bathroom with, there was eight of us. You know, I was, the vets didn't laugh at my joke. I think I was too scared. I was in there for about 2 hours. One guy was having a panic attack and, holy Christ, I was trying to keep it together. All our clothes are tied in knots and sock tape and whatever, but.
And you know what, and I know, like, guys have told me that. I'm, like I said, I'm not blind to that it did happen. Like I said, and this is terrible too to say, but I think that we came from a time when we were more resilient, and the expectations, we were expected to be harder. Men didn't cry. I'm super emotional. I cried when I got penalties when I was in Pee Wee. Like, I'm still emotional. I see my son, or you remember when Armageddon, the scene where the guy comes and visits his son for the last time, he hands him things, says, "Oh, I just want him. Who's that? Oh, he's just a salesman." And then when he lands, the mom's there and says, "Oh, that's your dad." And, you know, the recognition that he's done something good and something to be proud of. And the son comes over. I mean, like I said, I think we all want to be loved. And I mean, I look to approval from my parents still now. Like, I buy a car, "Dad, is this a good deal? Did I do a good job?" You know, I think even troubled teens or people, or, you know what, some days, you know what, all you need is a pat on the back. You walk by something and they drop an orange, their purse, a bag, you pick it up for them. Might mean all the difference to them in their world and save them from doing something that they would regret later in their life. I mean, we all have that opportunity to be positive. And I was talking to my son today, and we have lots to be thankful for. We're, you know, and I'm not saying people in a wheelchair have it less, but I'm lucky. I can go to work and put on my shoes each day. And as much as I hate sometimes sharpen million pairs of skates a day, I'm able to, right? I mean, you're able to be here and talking, and for the most part, all my family's healthy. So as much as the mornings and the depression bother me, and it's hard for me to get up at the end of the day, I've still got it better than 90% of the people in the world. I mean, we live in Canada, right? What on earth could you ask for?
Exactly. Yeah. Truly blessed, really. I mean, if you look at other places in the world, you know, it's we're very, very, very blessed for sure.
When I'll just tell you a little story quick. When I first lived with Valari Burry, okay. He would tell me about how he'd wait 2 hours in line in Russia to buy a single tomato and then eat it like an apple. When we were at our billets, there was Pavel was there for a little bit, skating with us. His dad, Vladimir, I'd take my potatoes. Valari would hand it to Pavel. Pavel would have it to hand it to Sergey. Sergey would take what he wanted, and the boys would take what they needed. I mean, things have obviously changed a lot since when we played 91, 92 in that area. But you know what? That's how it is and still is in some countries. And just some cultures.
Yeah. That's a good point. So growing up in Edmonton, were the Oilers your favorite team growing up? And who was your idol?
I would have to say, yeah, the Oilers. They always have been, even when I was traded to Calgary. Crushed my dad to wear a Flames hat for a couple of years. But yeah, the Oilers, I was there in the glory days, got to win them one Stanley Cup when the lights went out in Boston. They came back for Game 5, should have swept them, but Dad somehow had tickets in the nosebleeds, and we were lucky enough to be there for that. Gretzky was a phenomenal player. I mean, you could pick, I think one year they had 13 All-Stars, including their coaches. So how do you not idolize guys like that? I mean, nowadays I appreciate, you know, MacKinnon, Drysdale, McDavid, Crosby, you know, Lemieux was amazing. I've grown to like Fleury as a French goalie. His positive and his compete are amazing. There's so many guys out there that have, like, lots of guys that are drafted high, but lots of guys that have come from nothing and, you know, made careers out of stuff because of their hard work. There's one I look at, it's Wayne Goldstein's his name, talks about talent and no talent. I'll send you the link later, and how guys with work ethic and no talent go further than those guys with talent and no work ethic. And so I mean, so much of what we do in our own everyday lives is really up to us. If we're able to and healthy, we have so much to go forward with. I can use my depression as a crutch and say, well, I don't want to go to work because I'm depressed. But at the end of the day, you know what? I can get up. I have my hands. And, you know, like I quit hockey at 16, like we talked about leaving home and stuff like that. The pressures, never from my parents, but from within. And the learning from my dad that if you work hard, that things will work out for you. But at the end of the day, and we talked about this in one of our conversations when you called me, is if you're a diabetic, you take insulin. If you're iron deficient, you take, if you have depression, you may or may not take a medication to get you through the day. But if one pill makes your life and everybody around you better, so what? It's no different than a multivitamin. It's not a disease. You can't catch it. You know what? But ask me how I am. Yeah, I'll tell you I'm good today. Or, you know what? I have dark thoughts and I don't want to be here, but you know what? I have my son, I have my dad, you know what? I have podcasts where people actually care to talk to me. I don't know why, but you must have issues too.
Oh, so, huge issues. Well, we're both born in July, for Christ's sakes. We're sensitive. Yeah, cancers, 8 days apart. Jesus Christ.
I watched 50 Shades of Grey the other day. And the guy says, I'm 50 Shades of Fucked Up. He says, or messed 50 up.
50 Shades of Fucked Up. We should rename the book or write a new one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Grab your top 50 hockey players or athletes with issues and how they've overcome them. Yeah, absolutely. There, that's your next title and your next goal. Your next movie, 50 Shades of Recovery and Depression. Yeah.
Oh my God. So did you pattern your game after anybody in particular?
Well, as you could tell by my stats, it was Gretzky.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, you had a couple of those 200-point seasons too, eh?
Yeah, in practice. No, you know what? I think I started out, I liked Stevie Y as well.
Yeah.
I think as it turned out, I didn't really fight at all until I went to the Western Hockey League. I fought Kent Staniforth, one of the toughest guys out of the East at the time. Pretty much got my lunch handed to me, as you would say. And Max, he told me, he says, we got to teach you how to fight before you get killed. After that, I never did anything. I racked up a couple hundred points and 80 or a couple hundred pims and 80 points and went from there. And like I said, you saw my stats my last year in Belfast, 54 games, 55 points, 355 minutes. So I was averaging as many minutes in the box as most guys average on the ice. I obviously had, I think, been able to just play hockey like I did the 1 year in the American League and didn't fight as much, had people that were doing it for me that, you know, your body lasts longer, right? I think that's kind of why I retired in Belfast there, is at 20, you're fighting 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 25-year-olds. At 35, you're fighting 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds. And at the end of the day, as much as you can stay in shape and stuff, it gets old. You get tired. Yeah. You hurt, you remembered everyone a little bit more, lasts a little bit longer. Just like we spoke about drinking, you used to be able to go on, you know, 2-3 day benders. Now you have 4 drinks or 5 drinks and it's a 2-week recovery.
Absolutely. Yeah. So living in a billet home or host family can be very challenging for young men that leave home at an early age. How was your experience with the families that you lived with?
I was lucky. The Emirates were amazing. They're
almost. Is this where you lived with Valerie?
Yeah, that was the first year. Yeah, there was maybe they were too involved, but it was only because they cared. Their meals were made. It was tremendous. And then my second year, I lived with the Edwards, and they were amazing people. Always looked after, funny, close to the rink. Had some dogs there. Never an issue. Really just an extension of the family. I was lucky in both senses. I know a few of the guys wouldn't get, their billets were a little bit shy on the food, very caring people, but they'd always come over and there was always more than enough at my house. And at one point, it was either bring your own lunch or leave $10 on the top of the fridge. So Pat, so she could buy groceries to replenish the fridge.
Nice. All right. So I know you pursued, obviously, the college route, you know, playing in the NCAA with North Dakota. That was for 1 year. What was that like as you made the decision to obviously transition to the Western Hockey League after 1 year of college hockey to obviously play with the Spokane Chiefs?
Yeah, I think like for myself, I went there, they had seven freshmen thinking that I would get an opportunity to play. They had a couple Americans, a couple guys that were drafted, Brad Bombardier, Chris Gotsman, Marty Schreiner. And I thought, you know, that, and I had proved a lot after I left there, but I went there, the guys went to the World Juniors. I think I got five of my points of my six in the three games that I got while they were gone playing a regular shift. And the assistant coach had kind of recruited me over the, over the head coach, Gino Gasparini. So it was more his style of play. It was good. I definitely learned it. I wish I would have stayed, had an education to fall back on. But knowing that, I learned a lot of good things, work ethic from guys like Dave Haxtell, who was there. Amazing guy, worked hard. Dixon Ward, Greg Johnson, who's since passed away, unfortunately. But those guys were phenomenal. Dane Jackson, like, these guys were Greek gods. They're amazing guys. They really, you know, I had a struggle being away from home, not playing, you know, going from playing lots to like I said, and I told you this earlier, I said, to tell the guys when I work with MCN Sports Advising, I say, yeah, I was the coach's favorite. And they say, well, how do you know? Oh, I sat beside him the whole time. So that was a transition. You know, you probably known that yourself, being high minutes guys, probably where you were, and then going as a 16-year-old Tacoma, and then, you know what, not seeing power play, penalty kill, maybe a regular shift. It's a transition. And like you said, nowadays you have parents calling the coaches, oh, my son's better than this. And you know what? And I see it too. I went through it with Xander this year. I felt he probably should have been on the U18 team, but lots of that was in his own hands. It's what the coaches see and what they need at the time. Try not to be the crazy parent and sit back and just be the dad that says, you know what, you could have did this, or, you know what, where did we go wrong and how can we fix it? You know, they have those options. And when I work with MCN and I see this is the parents are the biggest problem is, oh, they're telling their kids an unrealistic goal. You know what we look at, and I don't know what the percentage wise is, but you and I both know, like, as good as we were, the chances of making it are slim, and it's hard. It's a dedication. It's a mind fuck, if you want to call it.
Absolutely.
And a piece of meat. So not only are you dealing with the demons of, you know, say some of us have depression, which I think I dealt with since I was 16, but then the going from lots of minutes to no minutes to being away from home. We don't know that your auntie died, your uncle died, you know, your mom's got breast cancer, and the coach is yelling at you because you missed a pass, because the hit a bump in the ice, which none of it is under your control. So the mental toughness and the media and the over stimulation, as you said to me once, is incredible for these kids. The stuff that I had to deal with, you know, it's simple. I screwed up. I got yelled at. I screwed up. I got a spanking. Now these kids, you know what, they screw up, and some guy in Australia knows that he fell off his skateboard and hit him in the nuts. You know, it's funny, but he's not feeling the pain that the guy, he's not feeling the pain that that poor kid got, you know, like, you don't know this, or you see part of some of these things, like a policeman arrests somebody. We didn't see the part where the guy spit in him, kicked him, hit him, and then finally he snaps because a guy pulls a knife that we can't see. Do we see the whole truth? Do we know the whole truth? Mark Twain said, you can't believe everything you read on the internet.
Being bombarded with an over influx of information. You know, I was so confused. Even I remember my first year in Tacoma, I was like, you know, I humbly say I led the team in scoring in preseason, and yeah, high on life, thinking that, you know, I was going to be on the top two lines, and you know, come the first game of the year, I'm on the first line, I get two shifts.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm looking up at my coach saying, like, is this really happening right now? Like, and you know, then I end up being kind of scared of my coach. Then it was like scared to go to the rink. that it was like, you know, just perpetuated, and I was then ultimately led me to, you know, got hurt and then in and out of the line. I was like, where do I belong? Where do I fit in? And that happens to a lot of players, you know. And so fortunately, not every player, but sometimes, you know, you use those.
Your experience, the more experience you have, you might have too many scenarios to run through your head. Like I was thinking with my son, and he hurt his hip flexor, and do I let him practice? Is it going to affect him, you know, down the. How many guys start ending their careers because of chronic groin injuries? You know, oh, I can just go one more shift, and that one more shift ends up into being no more shifts, you know, so on and so forth. Where do we do with our experience? Like I said, talk and simplify your life. Like I go to work, I come home, I eat, I poop, I watch TV, I'm good. You know, like I don't need to be trying to contact all my friends and reply to all their little memes. You can like them if you want, or just scroll through them. You don't have to please. You can't please everybody. You're not pizza, you know.
No. It's all about setting boundaries, healthy boundaries.
Yeah. Healthy boundaries, right? You know, like and it's so true. If you take care of your health, then your work's going to be easier to get up. I'm able to do this. I don't spend too much extra money on buying shoes I don't need, so I can, you know what, have a phone to communicate and talk to you and put out messages, or, you know, life experiences. Like you said, all your stuff that you've done with your riding, your all over the map broadcast, if it makes a difference in one or two people's lives and they can take something away from it, you've done your part. And they know that you're there to talk to. Like I said, you know what? They'll send you an email or a Facebook message or me, and maybe I don't know them, but you know what? Yeah. Hey, that's a great idea. You're doing this, or yeah, that happened to me. This is how I handled it. And I've seen other people handle it like this. I mean, in that sense, I guess the younger generation, if they're willing to reach out and take some criticism and learn from other people's, they have way more options. Coaches themselves pulling drills, even if they don't know what they're doing, the kids can learn from them because they are doing the drills. My parents, my dad, when he coached me, it was line rushes or you screwed up and you better peg skate. So we have the knowledge is there. If we're not sure about how we're fixing something or how we can help, we can read about it now.
Yeah. Yeah. All the information is there at a tap of a finger. Siri's a pretty good girl. You can ask questions to too. She's got a couple answers up her sleeves.
She's kind of giving me a few questionable ones that I don't know about them.
Yeah. No kidding. Some of them are sexual. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Which I didn't ask that.
I have no idea where that donkey and that whip came from.
Exactly. And that red gag ball to go along with it.
Oh no, that's standard issue.
Or that was Pulp Fiction when they brought out the Gimp.
Oh, the poor Z. It's a bad situation.
Yeah, I had a few nightmares about that one. So do you ever regret leaving college to play in the WHL?
I think now that I'm older, I think I see the necessary for knowledge and like pursuing a secondary of some sort, whether it be say like advertising or film or communications or just having something. People, as bad as it, I spent 20 or the better part of my life, even now, with the knowledge and gaining and of hockey, but I don't have a degree. So if I can't hang it on my wall, it doesn't mean anything. We came from a day of hire, you know, name hire, you know, like, oh, Paxton Schultz is a good guy. He works hard. He's a farm kid. Put him on a tractor and he can. Now you need Wemyss. You need your health and safety. You need ticket setting. You know, how many people do you know that have degrees that aren't knowledgeable? I don't want to say they're not knowledgeable, because they do have the knowledge. They've spent the time, they put in the dedication, but because you read something and you have a degree doesn't mean you know it. No. You know,
and it's like, all about perspective and perception too. At the end of the day, education is actually derived from the Latin word educo, which means to draw from within. So at the end of the day, we got so much knowledge inside. It's going through you know, life experience, the great university of life, so to speak, out there. And, you know, it's just my humble opinion. You know, the educational system out there right now has a lot to be said for.
Yeah, like you said, you can put guys on the moon and know how to do that, but really, like you said, you need to be able to change a tire. You need to be able to read a person. You need to be able to know that, you know what, like, everybody's a good driver until something goes wrong.
Yeah.
And the only way you get experience is by having bad experiences.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Learning from adversity.
Yeah. Like you said, and when we talk about this, because I'd worked a lot of time in construction, they're always tie off here, tie off there. Well, what are the scaffolders tie off to? We always joke about the sky hook. Well, there's no sky hook, but yet they're supposed to be tied off, right? Little things like that, you know, yourself, like, yeah, we can do this, but, and safety, and it sucks, is it only really matters when there's people around and watching.
Yeah.
You know, like, if it has to do with production and it's going to take an extra half hour to do it, chances are, you know what, you're going to cut corners and lives are lost. I'm all about safety, but like you said, some of it's not the reality of it. Like, you're going to reach across it or jump on a wrench or stand on a wrench to tighten it up so that, you know what, so that the pipes don't blow apart, but you're not going to, you know what, go get a impact and then a hammer wrench and drill it. And then even that, like you said, if you've ever held a hammer wrench, I don't know if you know what that is. You know what a hammer wrench is?
I don't. You're gonna have to fill me in on that one.
So basically, it's a short box end wrench that's super beefed up for, say, like 2-inch nuts and stuff like that. And sometimes they're only about 10 inches long. So you got one guy holding that onto the nut, and then you got a guy with a 5 or a 10 pound sledge driving down on the other end of it to tighten up those wrenches. So if you've ever held one of those, you're trusting your buddy an awful lot there. Like, I mean, there's, with everything you do, there's risk and there's reward.
Cause and effect, action, reaction.
Yeah. Pleasure and pain.
Pleasure and pain, and no pain and no gain. All compartmentalized into one goddamn spectrum. Jesus.
All those stereotypical replies.
Christ.
Cliches.
Yeah. So, I appreciate those answers, man. Clearly, when anyone looks at your numbers, you were an offensive threat that ultimately led you to being chosen 124th overall by the Quebec Nordiques.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you had a fair shake at showcasing your talents in that organization?
I think, well, like I said, my year I went to North Dakota, I was rated 63rd in the draft. So that was when there was 21 teams. Had to go in the top three. That was the North American skaters. Didn't go, understandably. Not many guys at that time were going out of the AJHL to the NHL, especially with the European stuff, skaters as well. Didn't get rated the next year. I was actually rated 38th the year I was drafted, and they opened it up to the Russians to be drafted and 18-year-old. So I went from 38th to 124th. My one opportunity, I'm not saying I would have stuck, but came a week when I was picked by the whole league, the AHL player of the week. I think I had, like, I don't know, something 11 or 13 points in 4 games, had a 4-goal game. The whole league recognizes you. I want to say it was the week that Patrick Waugh was traded, right? So they was traded from Montreal to Colorado. A guy named Rene Corbett, who played and ended up winning a Stanley Cup that year with him, left winger as well as he was asked, we think we won like 3-1, 3-2. He had an assist or something. That game I had got presented with a stick, you know, they presented me with the All-Star. I was going to the All-Star that week, that year in Hershey, and they called him up. I'm not saying it was I would have stayed up like he did, but I think it was my opportunity to lose. Like I said, had, you know, like the whole league sees that, you know what, he's done something good this week, that, you know, your team that fall in the hockey news, Pierre Lacroix had said, they asked him, if you had an English kid and a French kid of equal talent, who would you pick? And he said, I would pick my French kid, because I'm still Pierre Lacroix, right? And that's what happened. Had and this is such a bad time to be saying stuff like this, but with all the racial tensions and stuff like this, had you a black kid and a white kid, or an African-American kid and a Caucasian kid of equal talent, who would you pick? I'd pick the white kid because I'm white, right? Like, there would have been an uprise about that, but because it was said as a French kid and an English kid, I think here we're very accepting of that. Is it racism? Maybe, maybe not. Like I said, at the time, and I try when I pick teams, when I coach, the best kids without any of the process and the failure, you pick the kid so that he deserves and is getting what he's worked for at the time. Right. Not necessarily on their past laurels, but there is that. I mean, obviously, if you McDavid has four bad games in a row and you're down 2-1 to Calgary, but he's played like shit for four games, you're still putting McDavid out there to try and score that tying goal. Like, I don't care. There's some of that, but he's earned it in the past, right? You know, he's deservingly so. And if you work hard, like my parents said, you get what you deserve. If you're a good person, good things come to you. If you're a bad person, you know, don't be pissed off when you get 14 speeding tickets because you're speeding all the time, or you kicked a dog and then the next thing you know, you're bitten by a dog. Like, I mean, there's the karma. One of my favorite quotes is, character is what you are when nobody is watching. So if you're going to pick up garbage and stuff like that, and you see on Facebook, you see, oh, how many of you can say that you bought a dinner for a homeless person? Well, lots of us can, but you know what? We didn't do it because we wanted to post on Facebook. No. We did it because that's just part of being a good human. Ovechkin, he didn't care that he bought and paid for a meal and bought clothes for a guy here when he was up here. You know what? It comes out good for him, but you know what?
He's they not don't need that recognition. When you're giving, you know, you'd be telling people. There's two ways of giving. You know, really, to give is to receive with no expectations.
Well, you know, that's the only reason to give. Like, yeah. I have a buddy who's helped me out financially in the past, and there's nothing I could ever give him or do anything for him. And he's just my friend. That's what he does. And I won't say his name because he doesn't probably want the recognition, but he does it because he just does it. He's a good person. And he's done that for me in the past. It means a lot to me.
That's beautiful. It's really beautiful, man. Yeah. I feel you.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I see these things, I always want to post like, you know what, if you're really that good a person and you've done this, then you know what, just keep being a good person and stay humble. Yeah. Humility, like my dad says, if you're good, people will talk about you. You don't have to talk about yourself. And I find that, and it kind of pisses me off. Michael Jordan never talked about himself. I'm not a big basketball player. When you're asking and saying, I need my respect, like, that tells me nothing about you. Like, if anything, that tells me exactly what you are. We've seen it just in the past NBA playoffs. You know what? When you go out there about your business, you put your nose down, you are the hardest worker. People notice that. I got told that here a couple times, and I didn't realize that as a 15-year-old playing with a couple of my guys. To it, but you know what? That means a lot to me, and I thank my parents for that, because my parents are the hardest people, working people I know.
That's great, man. Great message. Yeah. So, what was it like playing your first NHL game? What did that feel like?
Well, I would talk about this with somebody not too long ago. I honestly, the only thing I can remember is rushing to get there, getting a penalty on my first shift, and talking to Chris Joseph in a scrum. We skated together in Edmonton here. He's always been a good friend and someone I looked up to. He goes, what are you doing here? I'm like, it's my first game. Oh, cool. You know, I think I played three shifts in the first penalty, none in the second, four in the fourth. I was up and down, had my cup of tea. I don't remember shit. yeah, that's about it. I honestly warmed up with Kaminsky and Sundin. It was amazing. It was great. Grateful for that opportunity. Jacques Martin was probably my best coach. I learned the most from him in the minors. He didn't want me fighting. I fought a lot. He's amazing. I was hoping the Oilers would have got him when he was available there. One time I thought He's something that the Oilers could learn from. So he was, yeah, he was amazing. The game itself, yeah, shit, I couldn't tell you anything about it. I remember getting up, I remember dressing, and like I said, just being higher than a kite, and you know, so many emotions. You know, I'm nervous, I'm happy, I'm scared, I don't screw up. You know, like, oh, I want to score, and oh, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I couldn't tell you. It was like a Fruitopia. Or what do they call it? We used to go down and make swamp water at 7-Eleven and mix all the different waters together, right? That was me. I was that 7-Eleven drink that you couldn't taste one thing, but I was in there somewhere.
Nice. So who was the best coach that you ever played for?
I think Brian Maxwell, I think, would be, have to say that, even though at times I didn't like him, he was the best and learned the most from him. I think that was the biggest jump, based on just his, I mean, you look at even his numbers as a defenseman. I think he was in the same year he's drafted first and third overall in the NHL and the Western Hockey Association. Lots of life experiences, the good and the bad. In the NHL, like I said, Paget gave me both my games. The year I had an opportunity with Dwayne Sutter in Chicago, Calgary, I hurt my shoulder in preseason. And, you know, him, he's a farm kid. I was a farm kid. I think that would have been a great fit for me. Never got called up after that. No need for it. But like I said, that was one opportunity I wish I would have had over again and stayed healthy just to see where I went. Like I said, Jacques Martin was awesome. You know, I learned something from all of them, whether it be good or bad, how I approach my coaching, talking to the kids, how I teach my skills or my power skating. But like you said, I've been in contact with Maxie, both on and off the ice, and he's always had good things to say and still a wealth of knowledge, even though he's super old school. I think, at the end of the day, you learn that, like you said, no pain, no gain. There's difference between being, you know, pushing a kid to where he's injured or to a kid where, you know what, his lungs are burning, but that's okay. It's okay to work hard. When I ask these kids, when I work with MCN, I say, did you work hard? Oh yeah, I worked hard. I worked, you know, I was running hard. I was sweating. So I pose this question to him. I say to him, did you homestead 10 acres and provide for your family in the winter? They're like, no. Well, then you didn't work hard. I mean, your great-grandparents, our great-grandparents, the founders of our, they did all of this, and that's why we're here. And at the end of the day, you know what? The sacrifices, I don't think people, I don't know the sacrifices my dad went through. At one point, he was living on $50 a month when he bought the farm here in 75 from my grandpa. And my mom was $100,000 in debt, making $50 a month. And my mom cried and threw away her wedding ring. She hated it.
she was ready still together.
And there's, yeah, that'll be 40. What am I? I'm going to be 49 next year. There'll be 50 next year. Yeah. So they battled through it. They raised us as, like I said, all my screw-ups are my own. I can take that. Nothing my parents had to do. They were loving and caring and nurtured me and didn't baby me. But like I said, they gave me. I've never gone without, really never gone without. I'm still not. I told my parents, I said, I don't care how much they beg me. I'm moving out of the house when I'm 49, I said.
Oh, boy. Yeah, home is where the heart is, eh?
It is. And like I said, I'm full circle and back here and probably spent, like my grandma, there's a house across here. My sister's since moved a trailer with her husband, but my mom would work. She'd work at the bank and drive school bus in the morning and the evening. My dad would drive school bus, do all the chores, milking, and then drive it in the evening. I'd basically, even in the winter, I'd walk across to my grandma's after they'd left. I kind of was on my own, you know, 4 or 5. From just across where I am, 100 feet into this house that I'm standing in today.
Yeah. So basically you attribute your core values, obviously, to mom and dad, you know, growing up in that environment's everything, obviously.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I'm not saying that living in the city is lesser, because I have lots of good friends, and you have lots of good hockey player friends that their parents work just as hard, and you know, and I'm not saying doctors don't work hard, because you know what? You learn a lot, I'm sure, a lot of mental toughness. You know, you have a patient that gets cancer. You have, you know, here as a kid, you learn. Xander had learned early age. Learned that's my son. He was drafted by the Hitmen, Calgary. He learned that, you know what, some buffalo are for eating and some are for making more buffalo, you know, like he's not going to be in therapy because his goldfish died and need, you know, months of therapy. He knows that he hunts now too. And you know what, if, as long as you're using it and you're not wasteful, it's part of the human nature, the survival of the fittest.
Absolutely. Yeah. So best player of all time, who do you think?
It's hard to argue with Gretzky or Lemieux.
Yeah.
It's definitely a different era. I sell sporting equipment, the equipment, the goalies are bigger. The game has changed. Everybody trains 24/7. Talking about training, I'll tell you a quick story here. So my buddy, Jared Brent, him and Ryan Burke are down in, I don't know where, they're at a golf tournament for, Garth Brooks or, no, it wasn't Garth Brooks. Anyway. They're at a golf tournament for this country singer, and Brett Hall's there. So they asked
Dwight Yoakam.
No, yeah, Dwight Yoakam. No, he's in the movie Shoot, and I can't remember.
Conway Twitty.
It's along that lines, and I can see his face. He was in a movie. He played himself. I'll think of it by the end of the story here, and. Brett Hall's sitting there, and my buddy Jared goes over and says, "Mr. Hall, do you mind if I sit with you?" "Oh, no, come on over." So they're drinking beers and having wings. And he says, "Yeah," Brett says, "these kids these days, they're athletes." He says, they're amazing. They're training 24/7. He says, "Not me." He says, "I go to training camp. I got a burger in one hand and I got a Coke in the other." He says, "So I walk in and they're doing the vertical test." And the trainer says, "Brett, come over here and say hi. You can raise your arms." He says, "Okay." I go over there. I hand him my Coke. I raise my hands. He goes, "Brett, that's as high as you can raise your arms?" "Yep, 70 fucking times a year," he says.
So, yeah, Brett and I actually went to the same high school. So my mom was really good friends with Brett's mom. We played in the same hockey association. He's 10 years older than me. But,
yeah.
I mean, and there's a guy that left home at 19. You know, hockey really wasn't even in his wheelhouse. Actually, it was a good friend of our family that convinced him to go to Penticton in the junior league. He had like over 100 goals his first year or something like that. Yeah. His story speaks for itself. The guy was sick. So came from
George Strait. I think that was
George Strait. Yeah.
I think that's the one there. Yeah. So.
All right. Yeah. So from a parent that has kids in the game, what kind of advice can you give to parents that perhaps put too much pressure on their kids?
I think I never had any from my parents, so I was lucky. I know that I put lots on Xander and I've stepped back. The one thing that my dad said to me that probably relieved most and all of my pressure was, you can quit hockey and I'll love you anyway. I think I know Xander, and I'm terrible about this. I'm always trying to get a little bit extra in here. How'd your day go? Are you working hard? Sort of thing. I think parents need to be parents and supportive and keep your kids safe. Let the coaches yell at them and do that thing. I still think that kids need their direction, even as young adults and even 19, 20 year olds. Like, you know what? You've been given these God-given talents. Is this really what you want? You know what? Use them. It's okay to remind them that they have to work hard. Right now, I think Xander's talents levels are equal to anyone's. I think, like I said, I don't think you or I know what it is to work hard. I went to North Dakota. I was in the best shape of my life. I had a 5,000-foot mountain. I was the best shape of my life. I'm feeling good about myself. I'm at 2,000 feet. You know, I haven't homesteaded 10 acres. I haven't provided for my family in the winter. You know, I don't know what it's like to get frostbite, lose a finger and still go out and milk cows in the morning and make sure that, you know, my wife has
bread and a meat and some potatoes to feed my kids. My, you know, parents are patching old clothes. We live in a disposable society. Let's make things worth keeping again. You know, yeah. Let's look after our truck. Let's look after our jeans. My dad had a pair for good and a pair for every day. They got once washed once a week, you know, like that was it. You had your Sunday clothes literally. And you had your clothes that, you know what, they're patched and they're 6 inches too short. I got a hole in my toe. I remember sitting patching my rubber boots with my grandpa, like, or my uncle, going down to my Uncle Billy's and Uncle Billy, you got bread bags in your rubber boots. Yeah, that's so my feet don't get wet. Oh, okay. You know, your wool socks are sliding around inside. It feels funny, or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
I came across a pair of skates. I said to my boss, Dave Ridd, I said, these are Supreme 100s. I think these are the first brand new pair that my parents were available to purchase for me. You know, saving things, remembering why we do things. I know I'm getting all philosophical, like.
No, know? It's just not letting anything like, go to waste that doesn't need to go to waste.
And like I said, it's not being finicky or not appreciating. You know what? Like you said, how many times do you sit and wish that you had an extra 10 minutes with your grandpa, a friend? I talked to my son today. I said things to my parents that I regret. And we always send them to the parent people we love, because, you know what, at the end of the day, they're going to love us, you know, unconditionally. But does it make it okay? No. I mean, yeah, we get angry. Should we say them? Probably not. Yeah, we vent. But there's other ways to vent, too. And there's take a deep breath. And I wish I was as logical as I am now. And even saying that, there's days when I fly off the handle. But
you're human.
If it can be replaced, don't worry about it. You know, things that matter are family, really. At the end of the day, if you have your health and your family, your friends, yourself, that Irish guy that's editing this thing, you know, like those are the things we're thankful
for. I like that.
Seriously, like, why not? You know what? So what? You know what? Your podcast, you never do another podcast, but your buddy, you know, buddies are okay. You know, that's great. You know what? You can still get your message across. I have a buddy, Ryan Duthie. He's down in Ontario somewhere. He's, you know, just living on the street. He played
in Spokane.
Yeah, he's
yeah. I remember on the playing against him. He was a hell of a hockey player. God, yeah,
absolutely drafted. Yeah, absolutely.
So he's homeless right now.
Yeah.
Oh God. Joe Murphy is another story as well.
Actually, yeah, we had the same agent. I watched that. My dad said he remembers, and he said there was not something right about him when my dad stopped on the way back from my All-Star game with my agent Mark Hall, and they were in Chicago, I believe it was, and he was hunched over his food, eating it like somebody was going to take him. You know, things were not well then for him. And how do we get that? You and I never don't have it, playing in the American League or wherever. We don't have the support groups. Like I said, I made 35,000 Canadian my first year, 7% GST, 8% PST, paid for my own accommodations. I think 48% right off the top. So I lived on 52% of 35,000. I worked in the summer. People are like, oh, you're a professional hockey player. You golf. I'm like, no, I can't afford golf balls or the time. Like, I would remember, I was lucky enough to work at home. My dad had worked for me my first year's pro. I worked from 9 to 4 or 5, drove into St. Albert. I worked out 8, come home, you know, 2 hours there, and, you know, 45 minute drive to and from the gym, and started all over again for the whole summer. And that was so I could progress. Now guys are, some of them are fortunate enough to make 75, maybe more, all US. That's a good living, you know, watch your money, and they can work out and golf in the summer. And try and make that next step. Whereas you and I never had that opportunity. It was work and that was it. Work and try and make the next step. So,
yeah. So after playing professional hockey for 11 seasons in North America, you took your game overseas in 1998, playing for the Bracknell Bees, then the Belfast Giants. Were you not, you just, yeah, I mean, you not only put up a lot of offensive numbers, but you also took on more of an enforcer role as well. Did you enjoy fighting?
I never enjoyed it. I never did. Still don't. I want my son to know how to do it. I told him it's like being a firefighter, right? It's better not to be busy. But if you're a firefighter and you don't know how to put out a fire, you're going to be in some trouble. I liken it. I tell these young guys, you have a fire extinguisher, right? You don't want to ever have to use it. But if the time comes, it can save your life or make your life a lot better, right? You know, so you need to know it. I went from, like I said, I went from 30 goals to 30 fights in the American League. We had a bunch of guys, like I said, and even in fighting, I think I went, what, I have 290 some minutes. I was third in majors that year for the, again, behind Bonvy and Kevin Sawyer. But like I said, I went from an all-star to 300 minutes. We had a bunch of guys get called up to Calgary that were tough guys, Jamie Allison, Simpson. Then I fought Jerry Fleming and did really well against him. He's like 6'8" or whatever he is, like 900 feet tall or something. And then I ended up fighting all the big guys and did well at it and still managed to average half a point a game. But Bondi would say to me, okay, Schulte, we're going. I'd get physically ill. I'd go into the bathroom, puke, go out and fight him. But I mean, I looked after guys like Marty Murray, Ladislav Kohn, Jared Scaldi, and you've seen it, Ice Guardians. I mean, yeah. Brett Hull said, you know what? I like those guys. They made my job easier. And I like to think that even if some of the guys didn't like me or the guys that I was protecting, that, you know, maybe they did at some point appreciate what I did. Because, I mean, after leaving hockey, and we talked about this, I had no sense. I had no sense of family. I mean, I had my family biologically, but their need for me was nothing. I had a purpose when I was there. It was look after guys, score goals, create opportunities, change the momentum of the game, be a rah-rah guy, play practical jokes on guys, cut their laces, you know, whatever was needed of me in the dressing room, on the ice, you know, be the center of their jokes and take a little bit on the shoulders, even if it hurts your feelings at times. But at the end of the day, I thought I meant something to somebody.
100%. Yeah. You know, you talk to so many of the guys from the past and even in the present, you know, we have all these relationships. It's the relationships that are formed, you know, off the ice that, you know, those are some of the, you know, the better memories of even, you know,
yeah.
It's all good playing in the game of hockey, you know, it's, you know, but at the end of the day, you become, when you're a commodity and you don't know where you're going to be from one day to the next, you know, some of those, it's the teammates and those experiences that we feel off the ice that, you know, have those, like those bonds, those unbreakable bonds that, you know, at this point, you know, that they're never really broken because we share some of the same, so many of the same commonalities.
Well, to make light of it too. And like I miss the friendships and stuff, but my cousin Adam and Troy, they're like 16 and 17 at the time, kind of when I was retired there. And I said, yeah, all the things I miss most about hockey, it's showering naked with the guys. And my little cousin goes, what's wrong with you?
Some of the conversations in the shower, eh? But, oh, God. Yeah. That and a stretch around the circle before practice. That was fun, too. Just jabbering at each other. I miss those days.
We have a family tournament out here, and I played in it 1 year. And I think there's like 20 of us or 22 of us on the bench, and I hadn't played in a while, and I'm sucking wind. And so we're sitting in the dressing room later, and I said, you know, this is fun. He says, but, you know, this locker room stuff is good. I says, can't we just rent the ice, get a locker room, get half dressed and drink beers? I said, it would be so much better.
Oh boy. So how many concussions do you think you sustained over the course of your career?
You know what? I was never knocked out on the ice or never finished a game because of it. Got spun around once, punched right square in the face, dropped to one knee. Like I said, I've been lucky in my fighting. I don't know if that was, you know, just because Maxie taught me how not to get killed, or I was did well at what I did, or I was afraid to get punched or whatever. I remember once going into the corner, and I think it was Fiorentino was his name. It was with Binghamton. Elbowed me square in the nose with the old Jofas with the hard caps. my first year, finished, played a regular shift, never missed it. But it's the only time I can ever think that I would have had a concussion. And saying that, are you okay? Yeah, I'm ready to go. Yeah, you know what? That was it. Lots of times, stitches, my eyes swollen shut, ice it on the bench, go next shift, come back off, ice it again.
You so, probably dished out a few, though.
You know what? I'm not going to say I was a super clean player, but and I never would want to play against myself. But I made people hate me. I was miserable. But and saying that, I don't know if it was in my nature or if it was just how much I hated losing. I would literally just about do anything, you know. One thing I never can say I can never did was punch somebody when the refs were in or on the ice. That was something that I see it today, and I know that the guys on the ice are probably freaking deserving of a slap in the face or a punch in the lips. But if you're not looking and you're not, you know, combatant or whatever, I mean, I'm not saying like I never punched a goal scorer in the face with my glove on, because you know what, those guys deserve it too. But I also knew that, you know what, there's a Georgie LaRocque out there. There's a Reed Simpson. There's a Christophe Oliwa. There's a Peter Worrell, you know, there's Jerry Fleming, you know, all those guys that I fought, Dennis Bonvie. I knew that, you know what, when every time I'm going to make your life a living hell, that's my job to do. But I also know that when the time comes, and as they say, answer the bell, I was there for it. You know, it is what it is. And the way I played and running over Marcel Cousineau and Bird Dog and having to fight him and let him punch me in the face, you know, and, you know, get us a 5-minute, you know, knowing when's the right time to fight and when's the right time to take a punch. Tell lots of these young guys that I work with, toughness is not necessarily what you hand out, but what you endure. And I think that's the same in real life too, right? Yeah. Sometimes you got to take a lot of shit to make that next step. And you know what, your boss yelling at you, maybe get you a promotion, or a customer in your face instead of retaliating to them. You know, a loved one, making sure you fight clean and not say something hurtful that at the end of the day you won't regret and your relationship's better for it.
Yeah. So I know you're known for your huge heart and presence off the ice. You know, that says a lot about your character. What advice can you give to not just the kids, but anyone out there, how being a good person can take you really far in life?
I've used, and I kind of touched on it earlier, is we don't know what's going on in somebody else's life. We talked about bullying to my team 1 year, and I said, if you're part of it, I said, you're off the team. If you getting it done to you, you're off the team. If you know about it, you're off the team. You're walking down the hallway at school. Kid drops their books. You walk past them. That kid goes home, kills himself. Yeah. You stop. You pick up those books and help them. That might be all it takes. Holding a door for somebody. I know I don't. I'm trying to be a better person, both inside and out. You know, looking after my body physically, mentally. Doing the things that I'm telling you today on this, Sarah. And I find myself trying to pick up a piece of garbage, you know, maybe holding, maybe not saying something that I know, like you said, you know, and I don't think I was ever a bully in school, but did I ever do anything to stop it? You know, if they were making fun of somebody who had bad hair, acne, maybe a little bit overweight, did I say, you know what, don't say that. Maybe not. Should I have? Probably. Absolutely. I think, just in general, you know what, educate yourself. Are all white people good? No. Are all black people bad? Or, you know, are all hockey players stupid? Or, you know, are all doctors, you know, just in it for the money? You know, no. Like, I mean, find out about that person. If Ryan Phillips is a good person, like him because he's Ryan. If Ryan Phillips, you know, popped your tires or let the air out of Irish's tires when he was freaking in the parking lot, then hate him for it. You know, like, don't hate him because of a stereotype, you know, like, find out about the person, you know, like, absolutely. You know, like you said, I don't know everything that's gone on in your life. You don't know everything that's mine, but if, you know, if that person's been good to you, that's great. If they've been shit to you, you know what? You don't have to deal with them.
Yeah. Yeah. You can always just walk away from negative energy. You know, it's yeah, for sure. We've been gifted with the power of making choices.
Yeah.
So choose wisely out. Sometimes. Yeah. Eh?
Go out.
And just do the next right thing.
And like I said, with hockey players, and I'd say this to guys too, are you the hockey player that you'd want to coach? Are you the coach that you'd want to have as a player? You know, like find out who you are. Am I the friend, Ryan? Am I a friend that you'd want to have, or is Ryan a friend that I want to have? You know, like be that person on the opposite other side of the fence. You know, figure out. You know, like oh yeah, you know what? They help me out. You know, like I don't like who I am. Like I try to treat somebody like shit. I don't want to be that person's friend, right? You know, am I somebody likable? I'm not saying fit in. No, I'm not saying don't have an opinion, right? I'm just saying that's okay to have an opinion, but don't force it on me either.
Yeah, absolutely. So you won the British Ice Super League title in 2000 with the Bees. Then when you were with Belfast, you made a massive impression with the team winning the British Ice Super League title in 2002 and the playoff championship in 2003. Can you tell the audience a little bit about that experience?
Like I said, I was lucky enough to go over there and have some good teammates, be the Bracknell, Rob Stewart, Dave Whistle, Colin Ward, Todd Kelman. Then we all went over to Belfast and we did the same thing there. I was their first signing, scored the first goal in Belfast, professional goal. We opened the new building. Great night, December 2nd. It was amazing. The fans over there in Europe, I would say, you've seen the soccer, the football, their football, very passionate.
Yeah, Glenn Metropolitan was actually touching on that a few weeks back. He was, you know, just how the chanting and the singing, yeah. The camaraderie is just like,
and it's only grown. Like you said, they've gone through some hard times, but when it comes to giving you everything they have, when they're there, they do. Belfast was, like you said, it doesn't matter how much a ticket costs. If it's £30, they'll pay £30. Or if it's £10, they'll give you £10. But if you don't have it, they can't give it. But yeah. They will give you everything they have to make sure that you are welcome. They're very, I don't know, like you said, the hockey was an experience, but the people themselves, it says more about the people. And I think the success that I had was based on the people and the surroundings of the community and the support I had from them themselves. Just feeling the love and wanting their recognition, not to say, you know, I'm better than them or this is how good I am. But as a kid, you know, you go out and you paint the fence and you do a good job and your parents say, hey, that's great. I love you. And I think that was the same for me over there. I think I gave them everything I had, and I got that tenfold in return from them.
Awesome. Yeah, so was playing in Belfast, do you think, your best experience in the game of hockey? And what's the culture like there?
The UK was people upon people, like in Bracknell and stuff like that. It was a lot of pavement. When I went to Belfast, it was more like I was used to here in Onaway, more of a North American community type thing, smaller communities, people closeness. It didn't matter that I was Catholic living in a Protestant area. They liked me because I was Canadian. We talked hockey, we talked sports. Like I said, just being a good person. They were amazing in the knowledge and learning about why things are there. And they want to learn about things, why they're here. And, you know, just good things. It was amazing. It was very, I want to say North American and friendly. I wouldn't say it's probably a lot of slower pace. Whereas you get to where, oh, it's all right. And they shop for each day. Their fridges are smaller. Each own community has its own pub, its own butcher shop, own little hardware store. So, you know what? You actually knew your neighbors. Like when I was growing up here, I knew everybody within a 10 or 15 mile radius, everybody in my high school. Now I don't know half the people. I think we haven't taken the time to important. Like you said, when it comes down to importance, is my job important? It gives me the things that allows me to live such a great life. But at the end of the day, without my family, I mean, I would cry, and I'd cry every day if my dad died. If I lost my job? No. would then my job cry if I quit or they fired me? No. Would my dad cry if I something happened to me? Probably. I mean, there's days when I'm sure he was pissed off at me, but I think on the whole, he would miss me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And I hate to preach because I've lived a tainted life at times and been a saint and I've been a sinner. But really, when you think about the importance of things, there's some things that definitely take that we've overlooked as a society, as a in the world, whether you be Catholic, Protestant, white, black, Chinese, Muslim, atheist, there's things that we need to as a people come together and find the importance. Let's go out, let's let our kids play. Kids don't care what they are. You put a ball out there, you know, they don't care if you have a disability or you're a little overweight, you have a hair lip, you have no hair, you have cancer, you're white, you're black, you're, you know what, the kids playing, let's just, you know, let's just play with each other.
Yeah.
that sounds terrible, but
it actually really does.
You know what, when you go out and you have a beer at the bar, you're having a beer because you want to socialize, you want to learn, you want to relax, you want to forget that.
Well, it's just true human connection killed. At the end of the day. True human connection, you know?
You know, what did Manny the mammoth say on Ice Age when Diego, he goes up to Diego and is it Diego and hits him in the shoulder? He says, yeah, like a punch in the shoulder for a guy is like 3 months therapy. You know, like it is, you know, like sometimes that silence is sitting in a room with somebody you care about, just your parents, just my dad, he has his man cave. We go and watch we have an ultra beer and watch hockey or baseball and never say anything, but it's just good to be in the room with somebody that is there. Just, you know what? It's a simple pleasure.
Absolutely. Yeah. The simple life, the simple things in life are always free. I always say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. For the most part.
Yeah. They have the
most. So what's your favorite hobby or let's say what are you most passionate about these days?
I think I still like giving people my hockey opinion, whether they want it or not, because I'm still very passionate about it at the store, sharpening skates. I build decks in the summer. I do some woodwork and have a few projects that I think I've learned from and done well, and they look good and people really like them. Really, that's just, I've tried to simplify my life, like I said.
So what has the game of hockey taught you about life in general?
That you have to work hard at it all the time. There's no those days off, whether it be just getting up and going to work or getting to the gym, you know, just being mentally clear, you know, putting everything in perspective. I had that conversation with my son today. I said, you know what, is hockey still fun for you? My dad said to me, is hockey fun? When it stops being fun, that's when it's time to quit. And I don't say if life is not fun to quit on life, but you know what, find the good in it so that there is reasons. Like for me, it's my son, my family. This morning I woke up excited to talk to you.
Thanks, man.
I did really like, I mean, had a somebody come into the store the other day, their husband's from Belfast, and signed some autographs in St. Albert. A friend from Onaway that I've known for lots of years and worked with, hit her boyfriend in Leduc has a Schulte jersey. Like I said, my cousin's friend from Belfast, he has a Schulte jersey. He works at a bank. I mean, the only time I ever get asked for an autograph now is if I'm signing a bank loan, you know, give me some more money so I can owe you some more money, you know. It's funny, like, and I sometimes feel I do talk about myself too much, but when you're in the store, like, if in the respect you get from, you know what, when I played pro hockey, this is what I did, people are more likely to listen to you, right? So then if you say, yeah, this is what you should do this, right? Like, you know, and I'm not saying this wouldn't happen, but really, Ryan, if I wouldn't be a pro hockey player with maybe depression and sinner and saint things and lots of you know, closet. Would I be on your podcast? Probably not. If I was an average guy that was going about my way, and you know what, not that they have anything less to share with you than I do, but I'm here realistically because of my hockey, so I have to be grateful for that. But is there things that about hockey that I would have changed? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But everybody has something to offer. I mean, maybe you should go one day and grab some homeless guy. You know what? And just talk to him. Maybe you have.
I have. Yeah. I actually did this thing about 11 years ago called Second Chance. And yeah. I actually didn't put it out there because it was kind of coming from a little bit of an ego standpoint, but I tried to get this homeless guy clean. So I got him a phone, I got him a bunch of clothes and stuff like that. But you know what?
That's 11 years ago. You know what? That's exactly the stuff that people have. Who are you then and who are you now?
Exactly. Now it's something that would never be filmed. Now it's something, you know, I just get a phone for a whole, you know.
Have Irish interview you one day and see what the hell's in your head and why you've changed and things since then or what's not. I mean, he knows what's going on. Yeah. Have somebody else have, you know, pick a stranger and say, you know what, ask me any questions about me that you want to know and come clean with them. You know what? People love to hear that shit.
Absolutely.
You know what? I did lots of things and I'll share this with you and I've said it before. So, and it's hard. And I've only have told one other person about this, outside of family members. So I talked to Greg Stefan, was with Detroit, right? Goalie.
Yep.
And so like depression, I never took lots for it for a long time. And this is personal. And if I quit, I apologize, but, I do things like people have alcoholic addictions, drug addictions. I've never tried drugs. I've drank and I've stopped because I thought it was becoming a problem. Never went for any help with it. Yeah. But I do things like, so sex releases endorphins. You feel good about yourself. I go out, I drink, I get drunk. I'd have sex, not with my girlfriend, cheat on her, feel bad about it, go do it again. So my drug of addiction, probably sex. And am I proud about it? No. Do I struggle with it from day to day? I would say yes. So like I said, talking about
it, your honesty.
But am I trying to, maybe I'm trying to lighten the load on my shoulders and get things off, but I can lighten
the load for you for a sec that, it's been proven that men are polygamous by nature and it doesn't make it right.
I've read all that too. And societies, you know, expected our monogamy, but you know what? There's no one person I don't think can be your everything. You can't talk to your wife about your wife. I mean, you're going to need your buddies or maybe even one of her friends or something like that. But I mean, we all live within a mold and there's certain expectations. If it doesn't fit your mold, live with outside it. Try and do the right things. So, I mean, we're all trying to battle back from our demons. And for sure, like I said, just because I didn't do drugs doesn't mean I wasn't a drug addict, right? Yeah. Of sorts, you know? Hopefully somebody out there can learn before you're 50 like I do that my mistakes are, you know, unacceptable to myself and to society in general. I'm not saying you have to fit into society because if everybody was the same, nothing would be good. Nothing would be
fine. Well, I think a lot of it too is, you know, these so-called mistakes, you know, we have to learn how to forgive ourselves too, you know?
Yeah. And my exes have said, as long as you're learning from them or make the next relationship better or whatever you do, and if you keep doing it over and over, you don't want to change. And I know there's at times when I'm lazy and, you know, it's just easier to do the wrong thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is the right or the wrong thing?
Yeah. And it's perception. You've seen it on Facebook. Two guys looking at a 6 and a 9, one from one side, one from the other. It's a 6. No, it's a 9. They're both right. It's an opinion. It's when you start to force it on somebody. I'm a Catholic. And I read something the other day where, all the churches are saying being gay or lesbian or whatever is wrong. But not once do you ever really hear a lesbian or a gay person saying religion is wrong. You know, like
I'm not a devout Catholic per se, have certain beliefs and it gives you a certain direction. The Pope said, I have a quote and it says, lots of good things have been done in God's names, where some of the most horrific things have been in the name of God.
Yeah.
Wars, battles. You don't have to be religious to do good, right? No. You know, it's, and I don't know.
It's like just about being the best you can be and doing the best you can moving forward.
It's so redundant. Not to, I don't think that's the word, right word, but repetitive when you say that. But at the end of the day, when you simplify things, is not just trying to help people good. I mean, you talking to me today is helped me. You know, thank I don't. You. And so I'm grateful for that today. You know.
I'll probably take some heat for this one because they have the gay pride parade, which is massive.
Yeah.
Why don't they have a heterosexual parade?
No, and I get it. And I, you know, and I think it's because as heterosexual people or whatever, we force so much instead of being acceptance. You know, do we always believe, do I always agree with everything that about gay and lesbian? No. Do I agree with everything heterosexual people? No, I don't. But I mean, it's okay to have an opinion, but and try and force it. I mean, I don't know where you draw the line on any of that. And like you said, take heed for it. I think if you're educating and you know, willing to learn about it, you don't have to like everything. But if you learn about it, then you can say, okay, I can see their point of view. It's not mine. It's theirs. And they're going to live with it. I don't have to go out and kiss another man. I don't have to go out and, you know, but I understand why they're there. Maybe they've been hurt by a woman badly that they, you know, that they need,
going on. Yeah.
You know, like you said, you know, guys talk about guy stuff and girls talk about girl stuff. And maybe that works for some people. For me, it's not something that I would work for me, but that's okay. Like, I mean, some people tie their left shoe first and some people tie their right shoe first. That works for them, whatever.
Yeah.
Am I gonna say they can't be my friends because, you know what, they wear a black shirt with a red pants? No, that's their problem that they dress terrible.
So do you miss playing professional hockey, and was it a tough transition, you know? From playing
pro, I miss it. Like I miss it.
Hockey. Yeah.
I definitely miss it. And I would have to say that.
To the so-called normal life, whatever that is.
Yeah. I would say, actually, we talked about it earlier. Like I said, is being a part of something.
Yeah.
And I have my family and I've always been a part of that. Do I have to beat up anybody for my family? Not yet, but I would. So we'll go. The transition, I think now, like these NHL guys, even the AHL, I think there's more support, and I've thought about reaching out to him. Mike McWilliams is part of a thing. I don't know if you know Mike at all.
Yeah, know the name.
Yeah, if you're not, you should reach out to him. He's got some good stuff going on to him. He's on Facebook. Fought him, tough as nails, great guy. Yeah, but the like you said, if these NHL guys, they got guys moving them. They got guys helping them financially.
Yeah.
They have depression. They have abuse, like alcohol and drug, you know, like the transition. Do we have this stuff? I'm removed from since 99, right? Has anybody reached out to me and say, Paxton Schulte, are you okay? Joe Murphy got NHL guys, right? I'm not dishing anybody that's trying to help him because everybody needs help. But Paxton Schulte, you know, Brett Duncan, guys that, you know, career minor leaguers, yourself, did anybody ever say to you, like, you've gone out, made stuff happen for yourself? Has anybody said, you know what, let's just check up on all these guys. Let's run a roll call through and say, go through all the guys that have played. And, you know, we've had all these, you know, Big Mama Bielak, Ripken.
That's one of the reasons why we're doing this, not just this Bogart interview right now. That's why the premise of this show is actually showing the human.
The boogeyman, like toughest job in hockey, right? You know, like
And do we do it?
We all need help to some certain degree. We all need to be able to talk about our stuff. And these days, you know, in these times of
drastic, it's hard to ask for help.
It is hard.
Like I said, I grew up thinking, you know what, if you work hard, good things. And finally, I started taking some medications and stuff like that. And did I want to admit that I was weaker? No, because I come from a time when I provided. I homesteaded, you know, like you said, homestead 10 acres and provide for your family. That's what I knew. That's what I was supposed to be. Wasn't supposed to cry. I was supposed to, you know, just be the guy. Like you come over, me and you, no hugging, no telling. Hey, Ryan, I love you, buddy.
I'll give you a massive hug for Christ's sakes and probably kiss you on both cheeks.
Yeah. All right. Again, great. Just what I need.
Yeah, just what you need. Okay, we'll stick with a hug.
Boy germs, great.
Boy germs, yeah. I didn't test positive with the swab in the nose, so I'm good to go.
Yeah, as long as you're just sticking it in your nose.
I had the other one before, and that didn't feel so good. Thank God that cleared up in 3 days.
That's what I saw one the other day, that awkward moment when you're getting a prostate test and you start running your fingers through the nurse's hair.
Well, I was pissed off because I avoided it for so many years when I was going into like training camps. And then when I got into my 30s, I was like, well, you know, I better get a prostate exam. I was super choked because the doctor fired two digits up my star. I walked out of there buckled. I called my buddy. I felt so violated. I felt like I was going to have to crawl into a bush somewhere.
Yeah. You can tell me that on camera, but I know different. Anyway. I had a female doctor in Quebec both years do mine. My
cough. Did you cut her fingernails?
It was weird. She was fairly. She wasn't like super model like or anything. She wasn't ugly by any means, but it's definitely a different experience. It's not that, oh, a woman touched me. It's a woman touched me.
No, it was for a purpose.
Yeah. It wasn't for my purpose. It was not for her purpose. It was just a purpose.
Yeah. Anyways, so what's your main message to the world, brother, in these days of drastic change? Any message out there for the masses?
Let's do our part to end this COVID first and foremost.
Fuck yeah.
Nobody likes it. Like I said, we voted. If we want to change stuff, we got to make a positive change. We have to go out there. Starts with one person, politics. If you don't like the speed limit, sign a petition. If you don't like the way your community or counties being run, change the people in charge. You know, get groups together and do it in the right ways. Let's not wreck our communities. Let's not wreck our friendships. Let's make sure that, you know what, let's be heard properly. Don't, like I said, make positive changes. You know, we talked about MJ and LeBron. You know what, be respected for what you do and not ask for it by the wrong actions.
Absolutely. It's all about building bridges, not burning them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how can we follow your journey moving forward here, Pax?
Like I said, we could touch base every now and then.
That'd be great.
Try and post inspirational and funny stuff on my Facebook. It's called Branded Hockey. I had a little bit of a hockey school skills thing. So I put stuff on there and, you know what, I'm trying to be about, you know, either fun or inspirational. And if you want the somewhat truth, turn on the TV and watch the news.
I took my TV down in 2007 because I wasn't believing the shit I heard. So, yeah. Anyways, yeah, buddy, sure. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Thank you. And if you guys ever need anybody, or if there's anybody in this area that you need me to touch base with, or, you know, straighten out or talk to, hey. And then when you're up here, we'll go make sure that Dad butchers a bison, and we'll eat and have a few drinks and tell all the stories that the listeners can't hear.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, if you got any awesome guys that you can throw on that you think could make a positive difference, definitely chuck them our way, and we'll have them on and have a great talk just like this.
Yeah. There's, like I said, give Mikey a call there. I bet you he has lots to share.
Okay, Pax, thank you very much. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Take care. Thank you guys for having me.
All right, peace out. Have a great day, man.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
I'll call you tomorrow.
Sounds good. I'm going to head down. I guess I better get going. I got to head down to Red Deer. No, I didn't realize. What time is it? About 11 your time?
What time is it? 11:01. Almost bang on. Yep.
So I think I got 2.5 hours to get down there for a 2:40.
You can stop and take a Timmy's.
Well, go enjoy
some your day. Juice in the car.
The outside for me. You see my outside?
I see the farm.
Yes, that's it. I don't know if you can see, if you're getting a connection, that's kind of, that's the barn there where I did all the milking, and that shed there, I just shot a million pucks there. And yeah,
nice.
Right where the fire pit is, there used to be a barn there where my uncle would shoot baseballs or softballs at me. I'd play a net and he'd, I'd go away crying, and then I'd come back and ask to play some more. So where that trailer was my house. And then the one behind it is where my parents are now. And yeah, all this, and this is the house and all the rest of the stuff, and the yard, and my Uncle Billy's field next door.
You got a nice little compound. You got a nice little compound there.
Yeah, so we got my sister's 17 cats that you can see all over the place. I think 17, maybe. I think it's down from a bit. So yeah, maybe you should interview her and ask her what the fuck's up with
cat,
her.
Cat woman.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right, man. All right,
well, I'm going to head out. Thank you, guys.
Okay, have a safe drive and enjoy your day.
What's Irish's first name? Mike?
Yeah, Mike Irish.
Okay, good. Because I remember seeing it, so that's why I was only calling him Irish. So tell Mike I apologize for not calling you by your favorite, but you'll now be known as Irish. And you can say that the cup I was holding was because of you.
Dedicated to Mike Irish.
All right. Mike Irish. All right. Take care, guys.
You too, Pax. Take care, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What a great guy. God.